Ladies and gentlemen, it is that time again. The crack is back. It's Friday, baby. I hope all you crackheads are doing well out there. Got a lot to talk about today. We are just 8 days away. No, sorry, 9 days away from UFC at the White House. It's been a long road, but it's getting shorter. Very, very intrigued as to see what next week will hold. And of course, one of our esteemed hosts of the crack, Chuck Mendenhall, is going to be there. So I want to pick his brain about all of that. We had a big article from the Hollywood Reporter yesterday with comments from Paramount, as well as Dana White, as well as producers for the UFC. But very interesting to see the demographic that Paramount are zooming in on with this UFC deal, their hopes for the White House event. Obviously, this is all on the back of the Netflix event and what will be the biggest MMA event of the year. All that crack, we were talking about it back then. Like, I wonder how Paramount feel about this. Well, we got some indication of that with this article. We also have the big Katie Taylor announcement at Crow Park. Brian Peters, her longtime manager, getting very emotional. Crazy to see. A very tough guy, Brian. Some of you might remember him from that press conference, the Tyson-Paul fight, when they wouldn't let Eddie Hearn up on the stage with Katie Taylor, and he gave that poor MVP PR guy what's for. Interesting to see him there. We had a lot of comments from Eddie Hearn at this event, including some about Tom Aspinall, who's under fire from a man I thought he was very close with, Michael Bisping, who was saying, come on, Tom, time to get back to work. We also have Conor McGregor. We have an insight into his sparring partners by yours truly. And we also have an announcement with the PFL. It looks like Costello Van Steenis will not be able to make it to his fight with Johnny Eblen, and they have a replacement. We'll talk about that later on in the show as well. But one of these men I've already mentioned. Let's bring in the great duo, Ben Folks and Chuck Mendenhall. Chuck, I mean, you must be getting excited now, buddy. It's like Christmas Eve over there, I'd say.
I'm bracing is more like it. You know what I mean? It's like it means a lot of things. Like, I was just looking at the schedule today, and there's so much going on that fight week, and you have no idea like what any of this will mean or like how it's going to play out. It's just such a bizarre thing. Like, I thought the Sphere, you know, when they had the card at the Sphere, that was going to be the strangest one that I would cover live. And now here we are, not, what is it, 2 years later, and I'm doing something even nuttier.
It is the kind of thing, though, that you want to be at. Like, a guy like you, I'd say you would hate to be at home, like, watching other people cover this. Like, these are the kind of things that go down in history, regardless of how you feel about it. And the dynamics surrounding it all will only add to the things you can talk about, as far as I'm concerned.
I might pull the Hunter S. Thompson, since we're talking about Gonzo journalism, and just stay home. Remember, he was out in Zaire. He was supposed to be at that That's big right. fight, the Rumble in the Jungle, and he decided to stay at the pool. I might try something like that.
Here's what I'm thinking. This feels like the beginning of a Tom Clancy novel. That Chuck Mendenhall shows up in Washington, D.C. on the White House grounds. I'm imagining he's got a little like reporter notebook. He's taking notes. He's wandering around. He's trying to like see some sights there to sort of like fill out the story with a little bit of color. He rounds a corner in the White House and sees like a secretive deal going down. And just sort of like, oh no, he's like, he's stuck. He hears something. He doesn't understand the full picture yet, but he knows this is big. And the next thing you know, Chuck is embroiled in an international mystery.
Yeah. I'm crawling through like ducks and stuff like that with like a bayonet in my teeth or something weird, you know.
Don't shoot the glass. He has no shoes. He has no shoes.
I'm imagining where like you're a world traveler at this point, you know, you end up in Tehran, you're trying to get out. Next thing you know, you're in like Venice. You get fished out of the canal in Venice by a gondolier, and almost drown. He looks at you and he's just like, are you all right? And you look around and you'd be like, no, I'm not all right. Where's my hat?
Boom. I fish a blow dart out of my neck, and there's a guy with a raven standing up in some window, you know. Can't tell who it is. But all right.
I think we should probably start here seeing if we're talking about it. I mean,
fun.
Do you know, like, what's going down for you next week? Like, will you be in the ellipse? Like, do you get a seat beside the octagon? Do you, like, when will those kind of specifics be with you if they aren't already?
Yeah, do you get to sit at a table and be like, so, which of us are on the Epstein list, eh, fellas? You know, and just start a conversation that way?
I'm hoping. But I, you know, it's funny because I went back just for the show. I was like, all right, let me see what the approval of the credential said exactly. And basically what it says is that I am approved for the credential, and it gives you all the list of things that are going on that week that you're credentialed to. And the media center, right? It says it's the bottom, but then not at the bottom, in the middle. And then it says, this does not automatically guarantee that you'll be on the West Lawn, as this will be a big media event. Seating is limited and all that stuff. And you will get further communications if you're on the lawn, you know, the West Lawn, to follow protocols, whatever. And I can tell you one thing, boys, I have not received one single piece of information about that. So I am guessing, just by power of deduction, that I am in the media center, and I have honestly no idea where that is set up.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's and they're expecting like 100,000 people through the ellipse. Is that right as well? Like throughout the weekend,
well,
there's going to be concerts, yeah, and everything.
You can expect as many people as you would like. Why not expect a million? You know, you could say anything there. I don't know how many they'll actually get. I mean, here's what I would want to know. If you're at the media center kind of thing, can you wander out of the media center? Because I think it could be interesting to go talk to people in the ellipse and just see, like, what made you want to come out here? Why? How'd you get down here? All that kind of stuff. Other than that, because sometimes UFC will, at some, like an event, stick you in a tent and be like, watch it on TV.
My God.
I
just don't know what to expect with this. And you mentioned like talking to people. I mean, in the lead up, I kind of anticipate doing something like this, right? Because they're having like this fan fest the day before. There's like some concert going on. There's all kinds of weird like activities as if it's a festival, you know, which only adds to the bizarre nature of all of this. So I feel like regardless if it happens on fight night or beforehand, there's going to be an element of that, of talking to the people at the event, hopefully some military people. That would be cool, like to get to see who showed up for that from the military side.
Did you talk to any, like, I mean, have you talked to anyone else that's going? Like, have they received similar instructions to you, or are you all just kind of sitting on your hands waiting to hear what?
Well, I have talked to a couple of, you know, one of them who Ben has worked with is Greg Rosenstein, our old editor over there at The Athletic. He said he's going to be in town, and I asked him, are you going to be on the lawn? He's like, I think so. I haven't heard anything. So again, I don't know if it's just that they're taking their time and kind of like really designating where everybody's going to be at this point, or if they know and they're just not communicating to those fools who are not going to be on the West Lawn. You know, it's like, it could
or
be,
or maybe they're
point.
Watching your coverage leading up to it and being like,
well,
see if this guy minds his P's and Q's.
Well, it looks like I'm in the media center then if they catch this episode, you know.
But I did Blaine already Blaine suggest the Epstein list idea. Yeah, no, that will be on me. I'm going to ask a question partially tongue-in-cheek, but also partially sincerely. Chuck, here you are. You're going to our nation's capital for this big celebration that also, I imagine, has got to have a ton of security protocols and all this kind of stuff. But it doesn't seem out of the realm of possibility that something crazy and dangerous could happen, given just we had some crazy stuff happen at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. People are doing stand-up interviews outside the White House and gunshots are popping off.
Yeah.
Are you at all concerned? Does it pass through your mind that maybe this is a dangerous environment to sort of be and just hanging around?
I will say that the people that I've brought this up to, you know, like just people who don't really follow the UFC, and this is really wild too, just on that element, talking to people about a UFC being in the White House, but they're like, oh my God, is it going to be safe? Is there going to be security? Like, you know, and that's what you keep getting is like, dude, be careful out there, you know, that sort of thing, which is a little wild. I will say that there is obviously some kind of concern there, but you would hope that the level of security at an event like this would be, you know, above that sort of thing. But man, like you said, it's our world right now, the way it is. Yes, certainly, man. There's a level of concern there. I try not to think too deeply about that, but yes, it does cross my mind.
And when do you get into town, Chuck? Like what is your week going to look like? So the event is Sunday. We'd usually get in, say, Thursday, you'd kind of want to be there for the press conference. Maybe I think the open workouts used to be on Wednesdays for it, but like what type of?
I think I'll get in Wednesday night, so I'll be, you know, hitting since the event is on a Sunday, I don't know why they put it on
just
a Sunday
to for fall
the, yeah, it's just happened.
White House lawn was not available any other day. Imagine that.
They do rent that out quite a bit, so I feel like I wanted to be there a few days in advance, so I'll be there from Thursday morning on, basically to try to capture everything that's going on and try to get some answers to the questions that we have for this event, you know?
Are you gonna do the Pizzi Carroll approach of what we should really do here, what the readers really want to hear is, what does every bartender in this city think of the event that's going down?
Don't steal my feature ideas. Let me get out there.
There's only one way to find out. And it would be impolite to try to
be slurring by the last ones.
Pepper him with questions without at least buying a drink and sliding a tip across the bar.
My favorite is my in-laws.
I've done that like three times. I'm not even messing.
I know you have.
There's some family that I have that basically diminutize, I guess you could say, like they see the UFC as like some rogue, I don't know, like guerrilla outfit. And so like that, and I never, after a while, you're like, I'm done talking about like trying to explain what it is this is. And they found out only recently that this event is happening on the White House lawn. And their first question was, did they get Trump's approval to do this? Like, they wanted to know if they were just going to do it. They were going to throw up a tent and throw a show, like a kind of like, you know, I was like, oh my God.
Imagine pieces of the octagon over the wall.
Yeah, you're putting the cage in the truck. Banksy. You're telling Banksy Ilya Topuria and Justin Gaethje, like, hey, if we all just show up together, they can't say no.
It's exactly what they thought.
Okay, I'm glad you brought this up.
Yeah,
this is something that came up for me over the past week. I wrote something on my Substack, thefightinglife.substack.com, by the way. Where I was saying,
that's
like,
a good feed, by the way. You write about all kinds of stuff, not just
And I don't write about that much like fight sports stuff. True. A little bit.
Bad name for the Substack.
It was a play on the Writing Life by Annie Dillard. You wouldn't get it.
You wouldn't get it.
Anyway, I wrote something where about how when I had posted like the column that I wrote for us last week about the USC's event here and the. I noticed when I posted it on like various social medias and it broke containment for a kind of a normie audience outside of the MMA bubble audience and how many people were mad, like not just like, I don't like it, I don't want to watch it, but like mad that it's happening, mad that the fighters are doing it, mad at me for writing about it at all, mad at people for being into this sport. And when I wrote about it on my Substack, it also broke containment there. And became the most read thing by far on my Substack. But then it was some of the same thing where I found myself feeling like I used to feel in the old days of being like an MMA writer in like, you know, the mid-2000s stuff, where what you were constantly fighting against was the establishment people being like, this thing is stupid. This thing is just like, it's just brutality for brutality's sake. There's nothing redeeming about it. It sucks and it's awful and all you people who like it are awful. And it was like that kind of a same vibe because there were some people who, you know, were just like, okay, this makes some good points. But some people being like, UFC sucks. It's for trashy idiots and like ignorant dude bros. And you're all terrible for even watching this ever. And I found myself being like, whoa, 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 whoa. Let me tell you what you're not going to do over here on Ben Folks' Substack is come out here like, hey, we can criticize the UFC because we know the UFC very well at this point. We've followed it for years. We know the ins and outs. We also, though, know
it's our
love
drunk
and
uncle.
Appreciate the sport. Yes, it's our drunk uncle. We can talk all the shit we want about our drunk uncle. You don't even know him, bro. You don't get to talk about our drunk uncle. And it triggered that thing in me in a way that I was very surprised by and I wasn't expecting, where I was just like, you know, you're not going to sneer down your nose at this whole sport, this whole idea of a thing. There's plenty of criticism you could say about this particular event and why we're doing it, where and when we are doing it. There's all that kind of stuff you can talk about.
We should really talk about that at some point, I think.
At some point. We'll circle back.
But the idea that you're going to come in here and just be like, this shit sucks. It's for idiots. And I was just like, no. You don't get it. That's fine. Maybe you've given it a chance. Maybe you've never given it a chance. Maybe it's just not for you. Not everything is for everybody. But also, like, just because you don't get the sport does not mean, and just because it's doing something weird on this night doesn't mean that the entire sport sucks and has no redeeming value. And I was surprised to be put back in that zone. I was like, man, I haven't felt like this since like 2009, you know?
That's exactly what it feels like. And I've had there's another, like, it's a fantasy football thread, but they have a second thread that's all politics. Like, so they have two concurrent threads going on.
That's interesting.
But these guys, you've got a couple of trolls in there, like, who just do this. But anyway, the long story short, I caught a lot of that, what you're talking about right now. And I'm like, you guys, no, you don't get to just hop in here all of a sudden, just because it came into your view and make these, you know, grand statements about the sport and stuff. I'm like, it doesn't work that way, man.
Yeah. You didn't know anything about it last month. You don't know anything more about it this month just because you saw a headline that says it's at the White House next weekend.
I was at my Aunt Mary, God rest her, she passed away last week. I was at her funeral on Tuesday. And all my uncles would be like, 50 to 80 kind of range. And that's all they were asking. Like, so event like a UFC, the thing they're do at the White House. Is that correct? And I'm like, yeah. And they said, and Conor McGregor is fighting on it. They just meld all the stories into one. You know what I mean? You're like, okay.
Yeah, well, I can see how that happens.
We thought he would.
Yeah. Yeah. But there is a definite fascination with the event, whether that's like everyone is reacting to it, whether that be negatively or positively. And we did get this, Ben actually put this in our group last night, the Hollywood Reporter article. And it is interesting. And Ben will give some insights after on this, but just in terms of the demo that they're chasing with this, and obviously their hopes that this will generate a lot of subscriptions for them. Here is the quote that is in the article. One of the things that's been really cool about seeing this UFC audience show up, which again is not a monolith, but it's the audience so far that has shown up, is that we have found on average the folks watching UFC on Paramount Plus are 15 years younger than our average audience before UFC. So for us, that's a massive unlock. We also then observe what they are watching when they show up on the platform so far. Some of those signals have been really interesting. You have a lot of crossover with the South Park audience, so that's been interesting for us. So then we take all that information and we say, okay, how do we make sure that when this audience shows up, they're going to get the right recommendations on the service? Not too interested in that part of the quote. Kept reading it. Wasn't very relevant.
You were committed. You were committed by that point.
It was kind of blurry too, so I was hesitant there. Like my usual reading performances are a lot better, I want to say.
They are.
But Ben, this is obviously a big factor for Paramount Plus. And when this Netflix event went down, we were kind of trying to position ourselves in that Paramount office. Like, how do they feel about the potential of this first event for MVP, potentially having more eyeballs on it than the White House event, which has been an event we've been talking about for the guts of a year now. How much do you think this is an integral part of this deal as far as Paramount see it? Certainly in the first year, generating subscribers for Paramount via this White House event, which we said is very polarizing, but hugely talked about as this article speaks to.
You know, what was really interesting to me about that article was how much of it seems to be talking about, here's what the UFC and its White House event can do for Paramount Plus, the streaming service. And not what this event and the Paramount brands, including CBS, can do for the UFC. It was this event can drive subs to this streaming service, which makes it sound an awful lot. Like, I read through that whole thing, and mainly I was looking to see if there's any more details on what the broadcast plan is. I've reached out to Paramount executives to be like, what can you tell us about what the broadcast plan is? They're not really saying anything. All we've heard so far is that we expect parts of it to be on CBS, the network, at least like some undercard stuff, but maybe not all of it. That maybe we will just show a few fights and then lead into like a main card that's only available on Paramount Plus, which makes me think, like, you're using this to drive subscriptions. That's what you see the value as. And which the UFC, I would think from their perspective, you want as many people to see it as possible. And the stuff that we hear from UFC executives and even from Donald Trump himself, where they're like, this is going to be the biggest sporting event in America. And I'm going, it's only available. Yeah. Right. Well, if it's only available.
P.T. Barnum said that a lot.
On Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, right? Like, last I heard, an update from a couple months ago was that Paramount Plus had just hit 79 million subscribers. So if every single subscriber watched this, plus on the night, you gain 20 million subscribers, which would be incredible if you could gain that in this weekend, you'd still be about 25 million short of the last Super Bowl. So, like, you're limiting your reach by putting it on Paramount Plus, certainly. And you're hoping that, like, people will watch on CBS, they'll hear enough about this, and they'll come and they'll sign up. But if we're using this event to help Paramount Plus, and not using the event and everything Paramount has, it's fingertips to help the UFC, That tells you something about what we see the value of this event being. And it seems like a kind of a one-way street that the UFC, like Paramount Plus, has spent a bunch of money to get the UFC and is like, here's where we start making some of that money back, is if we can get a whole bunch of people to sign up. Now, I did think it was interesting and maybe not surprising that quote you read, Pete, about how the UFC viewer tends to be younger than Paramount Plus's usual viewer.
15
and when
years.
You look at, well, when you look at what the tentpole shows are for Paramount Plus, that's not really that surprising, right? Like Yellowstone, Tulsa King, Landman.
Landman's a great show.
Every what single show. One of those is a show where it's like, remember?
It is good.
Again, not everything has to be for me. You know, some things could be for other people. But every one of those shows has something in common, which is remember these old actors? They're old guys now, but we're going to put them in situations where even though they're old guys, they're still rad. It's boomer fantasy in a lot of ways. It's just like Sylvester Stallone going to be 75 years old and he's still, you know, picking up chicks at the bar and being an awesome old dude, beating up people, going on a rant about pronouns, doing like, and everybody's being like, hell yeah, this guy is awesome. Like that, it's playing to a much older audience base. And so it's not surprising that if you get the UFC fan base in, they're going to be much younger and they're going to be like, I want to watch South Park after I watch UFC. I'm less interested in Tulsa King, perhaps. So like that, you can start to see like, yeah, UFC has the potential to be really, really good for Paramount to help diversify its viewership a little bit. But it is a little bit surprising to me that we have this big opportunity. And instead of just trying to get as many people as possible to watch it, we're being like, how can we take the smaller audience that will come to it and wring out as much possible value as we can by getting them to sign up for subscriptions? Because it seems to me like what they're saying, you tell me if you disagree, Chuck, the what I took from this was, hey, we have this opportunity to grow the subscriber base.
Right.
Even if that means fewer total viewers watch it, if every total viewer pays, we'll take that. We'll
I'm
take
almost,
much fewer viewers.
I'm almost imagining like, let's break back in a on CBS. Let's break live look back in at the White House. How's it going down there? And they've got like a field correspondent who's talking about like, oh, Justin Gagey's about, you know. I know that that won't be the case, but do you get the sense that they're purposefully kind of leaving out details on this just because the more people who think it's on Paramount Plus, obviously, right, in the end, are going to want to go to that. That's what their default will be. Well, I know that it's going to be on Paramount Plus. Do you think that there's a little bit of that, but at the last minute, and I don't know what that means exactly, but like at some point they're going to be like, okay, this is on CBS, but they're going to make a lesser deal of it because of this?
That's a good question. I mean, I hadn't considered that maybe we're just trying to be intentionally vague in the hopes that people will sign up in advance. That kind of seems to me a little bit about, remember when the UFC used to try to get you to like pre-order pay-per-views on ESPN? And I was just like,
they would give you like $10 off or whatever it was.
Well, for a long time, they didn't give you anything off. It makes sense that they give you a discount and you could be like, if I get in early, yeah, sure, I'll do it for cheaper. But for a while there, they were just being like, pre-order. And I was like, why? I'm not concerned you're going to run out. I'm not concerned it's going to, like, you know, it's a pay-per-view. It's going to still be there when I want to watch it. So maybe they're trying to do a little bit of that. Nothing I've heard so far, though, suggests to me that you're going to be able to watch Ilya Topuria and Justin Gaethje on CBS. It kind of seems like everything we're seeing
that's what it looks
like. Paramount Plus.
Yeah. I mean, I will say this, that the UFC has done a good job in seizing moments, right? Like seizing a moment when they can jump into something and they know that they can get a big crossover audience, which is, they probably do it more masterful than just about anybody that we've watched any sport over the last 20 years. Of course, the first one being just, you know, pushing all the chips in for Spike TV and then getting that payoff with the Bonner Griffin, that brought so much more attention to them. But, you know, you look at something like when they kicked off the Fox deal, having that first big flagship show with JDS and Velasquez, and how that kind of just got people to associate who weren't associating it, like they're okay, Fox, that's UFC, they did this. But the biggest one that they did before this White House thing was the pandemic, right? We're going to push through. We're going to be the one that comes on. We're going to make sure that we're broadcasting when nobody else will. And you're going to put all those other ones down. We're going to do this and we're going to say all the right reasons of why we're doing this. We'll go through the scrutiny and everything that you want to give us, but we're doing this anyway. And that actually ended up being one of the greatest strokes of genius for the UFC, because I think they gained a huge, huge new following from that whole thing. Not just in that, but in the gambling sense, right? Because people could have, you know, satisfy their libido for the gambling aspects. And like, so there was this whole aspect there. And then this comes along, and I do feel like this is the strategic play. Like, we want to be able to roll out in something that will seem like a ubiquitous, almost like or like, you know, it's going to be broadcast if it's Paramount Plus, however they end up doing it, but everybody's going to want to watch this for curiosity, and it's going to do the same thing, right? It's going to bust open the doors for a whole new audience that may not have checked in on our sport before. And it, so far, I mean, if this is their plan, and even though we're talking about it being geared towards Paramount Plus, I could see it happening for the UFC in that way. And they've had this payoff for them so many times where in the end they end up benefiting in some huge way, like the deluge of new fans, and then they know what to do with it. So if it works, it'll seem strategic from the back, and we'll be like, wow, I mean, that really worked again, even though, you know, we have our criticisms or whatever going in, it somehow has always benefited the UFC to be bold this way.
Yeah, the pandemic example is a good one, because that I still hear from people who email into my podcast and say, like, I started watching this during the pandemic. The idea of, like, that there is a pandemic UFC fan who is still in this is very true, I think, and that really did work out for them. And I feel like, especially the thing that is been like a little bit of an alarm bell for me and that I'm still concerned about is, like, I read that entire Hollywood Reporter piece. Aside from the photo credits under one of the photos that had the fighters standing there in the Oval Office, the names of any of the fighters, Ilya Topuria, Justin Gaethje, Alex Pereira, Cyril Gane, those names do not appear anywhere in the story. There is zero talk about who the fighters
so
are,
funny,
who you're actually going to see on this event. And for a story where it's just like, let us tell you about this upcoming UFC White House card and all the details about it, Dana White does more to promote Landman in that article than he does any of his own fighters. He says Landman is the greatest show ever in the history of television.
It's a good mother-daughter duo. I will say that, you know.
Pizzi goes, Landman, I Love Lucy, and something that only Irish people know about, I'm sure, as like his top three. So he's on board with that. But it's just like, you're so enthusiastic about promoting Paramount Plus's stuff. What about your fighters? I mean, there doesn't seem to be any real interest in that from the UFC. I imagine that has to change come fight week, right? Like, when you get out there, you're having media days, you're having these guys stand up in front of the Lincoln Memorial, you know, you're doing all this other stuff to draw attention to them. That's when you got to start talking about what people are actually tuning in to watch. Because so far, the sales pitch to viewers has entirely been, the UFC will bet the White House. Isn't that crazy? Don't you want to see what that's like? Come on in. And it's the UFC at the White House. It is not UFC lightweight champion Ilya Topuria and Justin Gaethje at the White House.
I do feel like this kind of backdrop, and as polarizing as it is, it does like lend itself to a moment. Like, if some fighters perform, if there is an epic fight on this card, it's obviously going to be huge. Like, I'm thinking about the Rumble in the Jungle, obviously Mobutu, a highly controversial figure who was a dictator over there who paid so much money to get that fight. But there was no way.
That is funny. There's parallels here. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, but I mean, the funny thing about that is, like, everybody kind of knew that the fight was taking place in Africa, but the stories about, you know, him and everything like that weren't at the forefront of the show, right? Like, they weren't like, this is great.
Yeah.
So here's a brilliant place. Come on over here. Like, this is kind of what it is here. But obviously he went on to have a hugely iconic moment for Ali against Foreman in that fight. You mentioned the Thriller in Manila last week, Ben. All of these fights, like, it was about getting that event there. But the characters, Ali, Frazier, Foreman, they were the people driving
James
it.
Brown, he played that. He played out there. You know, the big festival.
He did. Wasn't it George Plimpton? Was it George Plimpton who was talking about the shaman and she was shaking?
Yeah.
And he said, like, she had possessed George. Oh, we're going off on a tangent here.
Made me want to go back and watch that documentary. It was great.
But I got to say, I do feel like, I do think it's going to be a big night for Paramount Plus, because even the people who are adamantly against this, I feel like they're going to want to see it too. I feel like everybody is going to want to see it. Maybe I'm wrong here, but even all these people at, like, there was a few people at the funerals, as I mentioned, my Auntie Mary's on Tuesday, and they were like completely against it, but like, oh yeah, I'll definitely watch it. I'll definitely watch it. You know, it does feel like it's, the closer it gets, I feel like everybody's going to be tuning in on Sunday, which is basically all of the, what the UFC want. It's all what Paramount want. And really, I don't think they give a shit outside of that, you know? Like, that is, as you pointed out at the start there, that is the goal for everybody here. Even though they, you know, Celebration of America, all of these things, they said they're going to put that through the podcast. The brass tacks is what matters at the end of the day. And I really do feel like as we get closer, it's going to be a massively successful.
You think, in prospect and then like on night fight, and I agree with you 100%. Do you think we come out of it though and we're like, ugh?
Well, that's my fear. That's my biggest fear.
Because the atmosphere of what it's going to be will be, will be important too, right? Like, I just, it's hard to imagine the atmosphere when you've got these kind of dignitaries and like you've got like, I don't know, the 1,200 people that Trump is inviting. I have no idea, but you have like military, but like, you know, I don't know how that'll look. It's just, it's very difficult to kind of know. But if there's, you know, when we first were talking about this, I bet they present Trump with a belt at all this, you know, but we don't know exactly what they're going to do in this situation. But I just wonder coming out of it, if we're just going to have like an ick factor that we, you know, then it just feels like something that you hold in a very strange light going out of it, you know, like you don't.
Yeah. Well, the thing I wonder too is like, what kind of vibe do you get from the crowd at a thing like this? Because I was thinking about, remember the Fight for the Troops events at the UFC?
Yeah, of course.
And they would do them at like military barracks. And those crowds were rabid, man. Those crowds were super hot. And just
and by the way, like Luke Thomas was talking about this. He was saying that they let them wear their camos, which they're not allowed to wear. And so they were loose and they felt like they were there to have fun. I mean, it was, those atmospheres were great. Yeah.
They were. And like, you could really feel like the vibe from the crowd where it was just like the energy was so high the entire time. I remember the first Fight for the Troops. Remember, because it was sort of ironic because they kept making a point about how they were donating a lot of this money to brain injury research, and then you had a ton of knockouts, and it was like, well, there's more brain injuries for you, but like you could feel like that, you could feel the fighters feeding off of that vibe from the crowd because the crowd was super, super into it and knew what they were watching and was also very excited about it, and it created such like a high intensity, high energy atmosphere. And I wonder what you get here, because you're going to have some of the military, and I was encouraged to see that while they were laying out their guidelines for which military members get to be considered to go, and you know, some of them were seemed to be aesthetic in nature, but a lot of it was, hey, we want you to be an actual MMA fan. We want you to be a UFC fan. We don't want you to just be somebody who just wants to go.
How are they going to figure that out, though? I mean,
see, that I was wondering the same thing. Right? I was just like, I think we could come up with a great test. A great multiple choice written test for people to fill out that. But like,
that'd be fun.
But you know, you're gonna have some of those people, but then you're also gonna have a lot of like VIPs in suits probably sitting around, and they are probably not gonna give you that same rabid intensity that you got when it was all troops. Like, I think if you had done it where it was just like no VIPs or very few VIPs and almost entirely military, like you would have gotten a different vibe from it. I think it could feel weird. If it's not that, if it's a bunch of just like old guys in suits who are there to see and be seen and maybe get a word in the president's ear about a line item they'd like to see added to something. I also wondered if you do get a lot of people who are not usual viewers, who are Pete's family at Aunt Mary's funeral, who are tuning in and they're not used to this sport. They don't watch a whole lot of it. If we might be watching, you know, if we get like a bloody brawl between Ilia Topuria and Justin Gaethje, we'll be sitting here like, hell yeah. If we get some like Griffin Bonner type stuff, we get like a crazy back and forth battle, we'll be like, that was awesome. That was everything we were hoping to see. I wonder how many of like other people would be like, that's what you guys are doing over here? You guys are nuts. This is blood sport. It's insane. Yeah.
Wouldn't that make you feel good, though, after the stuff you've been put through with the Substack?
It would be. I'd be like, that's right. That is what we're doing. If you can't get down, there's the door. Yeah. You know, like, that's what fight sports is.
I want those think pieces back. Like, nothing to do with the, obviously, the MMA media have done a good job of pointing out this criticism as well. Like, I mean, you were on with Luke today. He's done a great job throughout highlighting his issues with it. You have as well, Ben Chuck. All of you have done a great job. But I would love one of those features where they're just disgusted by the sport. Like, that is what I want coming out.
We're gonna get some
disgusting.
We're gonna see some. I guarantee it.
Well, yeah, those are my favorite things. Honestly, love them.
I think we've talked before about, if you remember what it was like when CBS had the very first like primetime live MMA event, and it was James Thompson and Kimbo Slice, main event of that Elite XC event. You know, Gina Carano was on the undercard. Yeah, and that was one where the ear popped, and it was like you saw a lot of those kind of think pieces coming out of it where people were going, what is that? That was disgusting. And that one, the big difference was those of us who were hardcore MMA fans at the time were watching it and being like, okay, but please understand, that was not us putting our best foot forward. That was them putting Kimbo, who had pretty like very little MMA experience at the time, James Thompson, who was there to look scary but get beat. That was what Elite XC was doing, what they had to work with at the time, and what they thought would work to gain viewers and gain popularity. We all knew those aren't the best fighters that MMA has. That's not the best MMA could show you. If you give us a chance, there's better stuff. Here, you actually do have some of the best that we have to offer. You have Ilia Topuria, arguably one of the greatest fighters on the planet right now, a true artist of the mixed martial arts. You have Alex Pereira, who is great at what he does. You have like a lot of good fighters on this, which is one of the reasons why I keep waiting for them to be like, here's what specifically you will be watching on next Sunday night.
What do you think, right? Like, if you were to break it down now, you look at the card. I don't know if you have it in front of you. I'll pull it up in front of me here. But like, what would you expect from this event? Like, what do you think? Like, if you are a Paramount executive here, what way are you breaking up? Are you stopping it right before the O'Malley fight? So then you have to tune, you have to subscribe to Paramount to get O'Malley v. Zahabi, Pereira v. Gan, and then of course Ilia v. Gaethje. Like, is that the way you'd play it?
That's a good question, because you want to lead in with something great. You want the last fight that you show on like CBS, if you're planning to show us
Josh Hokett, portion baby. Of it.
Yeah. Josh Hokett and Derek Lewis, always tricky to roll the dice on heavyweights.
It
always
is.
Because you could get one kind of heavyweight fight that is brief and memorable, or you can get the other kind. Now, Josh Hokett is just coming off of the rarest of heavyweight fights, the kind that goes the distance but is awesome the entire time.
Right.
That the almost never happens. Yeah. That's very, very rare. And so it's like, you don't know what you're going to, because you could.
Although
very
we've
well,
seen Derek Lewis do both.
We've seen Derek Lewis do the full range, the full spectrum of heavyweight experience.
That's right.
Derek Lewis has good, because it's like, he might go out there and get a quick knockout. He also might go out there and just look like he doesn't want to be there. Like, we've seen that from Derek Lewis too.
Francis where like,
yeah, well, or like, you know,
Francis didn't want to be there either, to be fair.
Yeah, that's true.
I think it depends depends a lot on how does Josh Hokett want to fight that one?
Yeah.
Because like, does he go out there and be like, I know what this crowd wants. I know what the UFC wants for me in this moment. They want me to go out here toe to toe with Derek Lewis and beat him. And that's the best chance Derek Lewis has in that fight, is for you to fight him that way. Like, you could, Josh Hokett could still potentially beat him that way because he's fast, he's athletic, he will have a speed advantage. But all Derek Lewis needs is for you to stand there long enough for him to land one punch. And if Josh Hokett decides to be smart about it and be like, I'm taking Derek Lewis down and I'm beating him up on the mat, that might not be the greatest leader. You might be better off then going with Sean O'Malley, who people like are excited about and they know. And then you could lead in by saying, up next, the title fights. You want to see the stuff that really matters. The title fights are on Paramount Plus.
Yeah, that's not a bad way to go.
Would you do that, Chuck?
Yeah. I mean, I would try. I mean, it was effective in the day. Like when the UFC used to, like, Dana would get on there, maybe start shouting, his cords in his neck would start coming out and that. Turn red.
Ball
yeah, like
that sort of thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Love that shit. Yeah.
I mean, it was effective then. I mean, you want to do that. You want to do something that's basically a baton pass to the next and everybody just signs up in that moment. So, that's probably how I'd play it. If you, by the way, like, if you had any octagon jitters, right? They always talk about that. Imagine walking out for this one. Like, this is such a different type of event, being outdoors, being like the world watching and being there. It's a crazy thing to contemplate. When you're mentioning like Hokett and you're like, man, imagine actually being in that situation where there's like an expectation. They threw you on this card after your ridiculous, like, triage brawl, like where he's like basically like, you know, in the ambulance and he finds out he's going to do it. But that was after a ridiculous bout. Now the expectation is you got to go do that again, but do it at the White House. I mean, that's a lot of pressure on your hands there.
do it at the White House and against a guy who hits a lot harder than Chris Blades does.
Yeah.
Before we move on, I really feel like they're going to try and do this Oval Office thing. I really want them to do, right? If I'm here, I'm in for a penny, in for a pound. I want the whole lot. I want the Oval Office walk. I want the whole fucking thing. And it keeps on being suggested in these articles. And, you know, they're being very secretive about it. I think if Dane is at this point and he knows it's not going to happen, he's just going to say no. So he'd rather not build us up in that way. I know he has done that previously with 300 and, of course, this card as well. The card's pretty good, though, in fairness. Where are your feelings on that, Chuck? Are we going to see a walk from the Oval?
I think so, right? Isn't that what they said they're going to
do?
I mean, that's what they said they're going to do. Well, I don't know. I mean, they did say at one point, too, that there was going to be a literal fight island and an octagon on the beach, you know? So
and then
I don't
know. And then they acted like we were idiots for thinking that.
Who cares about the coastline?
No,
you fucking gullible idiot.
My question is, I totally get what you're saying, PC, that like, hey, if we're doing this, let's do it.
Fucking
I think they will, don't you? I think they
How
will.
Long is the walk from, that's my big question. I've not been to the White House. I'm ashamed to say, like, I'm 46 years old, lived in America all my life, never been to the White House. So I don't know. I don't have a good sense. How long does that walk take? Because if you're showing us, if the idea is show us these guys starting in the Oval Office and then walking down to the cage, if that takes a minute and a half for everybody to get down there,
gotta have a long walkout song,
a lot of
5-minute version
corridors. Like, it'll become a Monty Python sketch at a certain point where you're just following these guys. It'll be Spinal Tap, them like getting lost and turning around corners and stuff like
Three clicks down there.
They walk out of the office and into a little golf caddy and they fucking start driving them towards the lawn and then they get out again.
Just be impractical. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Golf carts. Figure it out. You know what I mean? I want to see the boys walking out with the maybe just the main event.
It would give it something, because the UFC just doesn't go in for this type of thing. I was at that Times Square boxing event. You know, guys are rolling up, you know, to the curb and like whatever
in the taxis,
fancy
right?
cars and taxis and whatnot, and like getting out and coming out. And you're like, okay, that's a, you know, certain boxing events, certain MMA events, but the UFC has never really done this. You know, they're used to just rolling them straight to the hole and on we go. So that would be a very different feel to the proceedings if that happens.
It was, wouldn't that fit with something where like this entire thing is going to be a very different feel. And that's part of what you're selling, is that this is something like you have never seen before. And I think that there is a value in that. There's a real value in that novelty. That works on people. But I also, like, imagine you're standing there in the Oval Office, you're hitting pads or whatever. You're looking over and you're being like, oh, this is where, that's maybe where Nixon was sitting when he told them to cover up the Watergate burglary. You know, like this is where the Bay of Pigs invasion was planned over here. You know, that's where Henry Kissinger was just like, let's go ahead and bomb them all back to the Stone Age. And you're just like, huh, now here I am out here getting ready to go fight Ayman Zahabi. What the hell? What is life?
If they got a deep cut, maybe it's a Garfield reference or a Grover Cleveland or something like that. What do you think? We don't hear about those presidents as much, do we? It's like
you don't, and I don't see a whole lot of people on this fight card reaching for Grover Cleveland as their first point of reference for the U.S. president.
Maybe Diego Lopez, but anyway, we'll see.
I'm going to Google him immediately after the show. Just so
you didn't even know who Loretta Lynn or Errol Flynn were. Come on, you're not going to know these guys.
I know one of them has a nice mustache. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, Loretta shaved that in the later years.
Ben, I got to tell you something. You know, for a long time, you've cast aspersions on the wonderful National Stadium, Croke Park. And today, we got the announcement, baby. Croke Park is hosting Katie Taylor's final ever fight. It's her third time to be undisputed. Well, when she fights, of course, against Flora Peely. Not a very well-known opponent, I will say. But the buzz over here, boys, is fucking crazy. Like, I mean, I actually can't put into words what Croke Park means to Ireland. It's central to the Irish identity. It's nearly like a monument in the middle of the city erected to enhance the Irish identity through the Gaelic Games. We have had fights here before. Muhammad Ali fought here in the 70s, and now Katie Taylor. Not so long after boxing pretty much went away in the Republic of Ireland due to that Hutch Kinahan situation, she's brought it back with these events in Three Arena, and now Croke Park. Boxing is buzzing here. And really, I was watching this press conference today and Eddie Hearn was giving it all the, you know, biggest moment in women's boxing history and all this stuff. But nothing hit me more than seeing, hard man that he is, tough guy, Brian Peters breaking down at the press conference, and I believe we have the video here. This got me right in the feels, boys.
I'm afraid that's it. That's my Irish. But I had just gone for a second there. So look, I suppose 4 years ago, we dared to dream that this day would become a reality. And it takes all these people up here, a lot of heavyweights, and not talking about anyone's weight or casting aspirations on anyone. It takes a lot of people to make this a reality. I'm delighted that we have. I'd like to thank you, Eddie. I think 2016, myself, Katie, and Bridget, shout out to Bridget, went into your office and, you know, sorry, guys. Have a drink here. Sorry about that.
I can't wait to play this back over the next couple of years.
Yeah. What
send
it
you
is
this
to
on
do
WhatsApp every day. You know.
Well, it's real. But look, yeah, we went into you that day, Eddie. I don't think we really had a plan. We didn't know where we were going. We didn't know how we were going to do it. You know, after Katie spoke to you, just with the conviction that she showed, I think you believed we had something very special. You know, I'd like to thank you very much. Eternally grateful, Eddie, for where you've brought us. Four corners of this planet, all the great stadiums. And, you know, Frank Smith has been great. The Matchroom UK team, the Matchroom US team, all been outstanding. So we couldn't have done without you. Thank you very much, Eddie.
Well, there it is, lads. Katie up there, sitting there, letting everyone do the talking for her like the deity she is. And let me tell you, if there was one thing that was asked about more than UFC at the White House at Auntie Mary's funeral on Tuesday, it was Katie Taylor. Is this going to happen? We're all going to go. Everybody, every fucking person I've spoke to is like, we're going. I don't give a shit how much it costs. But here's the thing. Look how they price this thing. I think we have a tweet, do we, Andy, of the pricing?
I think you have to read that.
I think it's like $38.70 for a ticket. €38.70 and then $125.50 or something for a family ticket, which would get you four people in. This is an 80,000 seat stadium and a beautiful stadium at that. But the way people are talking, despite the opponent, which I think some people were let down by, especially boxing people, but I think this is going to look fucking insane. If the 80,000 people show up to see Katie Taylor in this fight, it's going to be one of the greatest Irish sport moments of all time. And I am fucking buzzing. I don't really have
a question.
You're going to go? I am going to go. Listen, Katie wouldn't be able to fight without me at this stage.
That's true.
You know what I mean? She'd be looking into the crowd. She'd be going, where is he?
How many people fit into the O2 in Dublin?
The three arena is 9,000 people. 9,000.
Because, you know, I always think back to that. Was it 2014 or 13? When Conor fought there, and I never really have like the FOMO thing, like of watching UFC, but that was the one time where I was like, man, I wish I could be in that building. It was just so different, so electric that you could feel it coming off of the telecast and just the way the fans were and all that stuff. It was one of those rare events. And I think that's why there was such intrigue even for North Americans. It's like, what about Croke Park? And we would always associate Conor McGregor to this to historic event where they would have to be that size of place, right? If he's going to fight in Ireland again, it's going to have to be that size of place. And it never got done, to the point where I know Ben and I have joked that we're not even sure that Croke Park exists. We thought it was just something that people talked about and it was like one of the myths, you know, or something. But to see it get done and like the pictures of her and all that stuff, I'm with you, man. I feel like that's the biggest boon. And I think when we were talking, we were watching the Serrano fight when you were out here in New York. And we were like, if somebody's going to get it done, it's going to be her. And you thought she would. And here she is. That's pretty wild. And like, how did they do it? Is this going to be an afternoon type of affair? How did they get by the noise ordinances and things that they had in place?
Yeah, it's going to be at local time, September 5th.
Okay.
So like, it's very tactical how you have to book this, because the All-Ireland Championships are happening at the same time. And that is where all of the games are contested. So to find the gap there where you can do it in this, on this kind of frame of the calendar, is crazy. And also, the first time Eddie Hearn went, he didn't really know who he was dealing with. Like, the GAA are like a very powerful machine here. You've got to bend the knee a bit when you're talking to these people. Like, they don't fuck around. Like, they're like, we're completely happy not to take your money. We have loads. We have this thing. You want this. Come and get it. And he had a completely different strategy this time around. Even the way he was speaking about the GAA, about Croke Park, It was like the first time he went in, he didn't understand. It was like making a deal at Wembley and we just signed this away and everything's fine. It's a way bigger deal here. It's the closest thing to like sacred land as you can get, really. You know,
you're saying that the games are going on at this, like they're going to have to erect a boxing ring, get all the seats like down there on the actual turf and everything, and then clear it out so that we can play like hurling the next day. Because that's not crazy. The next day.
I don't think it would be the next day. It would be like, I think that date in the calendar, I'm not too sure. I don't have the fixtures in ahead of me now, but we're in quarterfinal. I don't know. I usually the games are contested into that first week of September. Maybe it's stopping the week early, but they'll have other things to do, like exhibitions, all this kind of stuff that'll be going on. Concerts as well. A lot of people use the venue. It's just the curfew that killed the UFC because they obviously wanted to do a massive event in Croke Park, but tailor it to their pay-per-view audience in the US. And you would have to do it at an hour, which just didn't suit the Residents Association. Because you're talking like, you walk out of Croke Park, you're in the middle of an estate. Like you are in someone's front garden, basically. So like, I remember Bruce Springsteen, I went over the time once, and I think it was something crazy, like 10 grand a minute they charged him like for going over or something fucking insane. So
that's one guy who can afford it, by the way, Ben.
But I mean, if he's playing Jungle Land, there's like 12 minutes right there.
That is true. That is true.
That's a $120,000 song at that point.
He doesn't give up.
And the live version? Oh, brother.
Rosalita goes on and on and on.
Anyway, it's very exciting is what I'm trying to tell you.
But, okay. You know what? I'm excited by your excitement. The Croke Park stuff, I never cast aspersions. I want to push back on that narrative. I never cast aspersions. I just questioned that if it was ever going to happen, because it seems like as a fight sports fan, the only time I hear about Croke Park is somebody's fanciful suggestion that they are going to have this big fight in Croke Park, and it never, ever, ever happens. It's always just a thing people talk about. And so I was just like, I don't know. Every time somebody brings it up now, I'm just like, you might as well have just told me that this was a dream you had. Like it's not anything that's real, anything we need to actually think about. And so them actually doing it, seeing the tears there, that clip honestly had a real, I didn't cry when my own father was hung for stealing a pig, but I'll cry now kind of vibe to it, where it's just like, you can imagine that man's not crying very easily. He's not seeing like an AT&T commercial and getting teary eyed at it. Like it takes a lot. And for something like that to move him, I was just like, okay, this is a really big deal. And I think that enthusiasm will translate and carry over to us.
Do you guys remember the Alvin Blue Lewis fight that was there?
No.
I'm trying to... You said that the dude's name he fought. I can't remember.
Muhammad Ali?
Muhammad Ali. He fought that Muhammad Ali kid there back in 72.
Nobody really remembers the other guy. It was so funny, though. Like, there's footage of, like, Ali playing hurling on the pitch going, like, this is a fucking good game, actually.
Yeah.
but, like, to give you an insight, like, in I think it was 1920, there was a football game being played there, and English troops came on to start opening fire on the people there. Like, and 14 people died. I think one player died for one of the teams. And that's all, like, you know, this monument to Irish culture. They were trying to build this culture through these sports. And I can't remember the exact year. The rugby team usually play at Lansdowne Road, which is on the south side of the city. And it's the rugby ground, and all the Six Nations games play there. For whatever reason, they were building the Aviva Stadium at the time, I think, and they had to host the rugby games at Croke Park, which was a big deal because they don't want garrison games, as they call them, football or rugby being played in this place. But they decided, right, the rugby team mean a lot to the country, let's let them play. They drew England, and they had to play England on that pitch. And they play Hour on the V and our national anthem. And you see these guys, like 6'6", 300 pounds, arm in arm, just weeping openly. Like, because they're about to play in Croke Park against England, of course, our famous historical rivals. But, like, it's just something that means something completely different to Irish people. So to see Katie Taylor getting this moment, and not just, like, it's also, like, if I'm Eddie Hearn, I'm like, I did something that Dana White couldn't do.
Right.
You had the biggest star on earth and you couldn't do this. I'm doing it. Because of their war words, I can't imagine that he won't take that as an extra feather in his cap too.
Did you say garrison games?
That's what they called them, because they used to play like cricket, rugby and soccer in the garrisons, like when they were, you know, taking over Ireland. So they called
sort of
The GA games will call them, the GA people will call them garrison games. Yeah. No garrison games.
It's like these are the games played in the military compounds of the colonizer. These are not our games. Okay.
Yes.
I kind of like it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, believe me. They like it too. Believe me. more Irish related. We will hear from Mr. Hearn in a second, though. I did this article on Conor McGregor's sparring partners because this used to be a big thing. You know, when Conor McGregor was fighting, people were
that's
like,
true.
I want to know everything about it. Got about 7 likes today when I put it out. it's like, so everyone keeps sending me this shit. Like, everyone keeps sending me, like, he's sparring this guy and he's sparring this guy. And, you know, some of the fighters very well know. Lee Hammond's been there for over 10 years, a jiu-jitsu ace out of SBG. They have Owen Sheridan there, a big towering welterweight, 6'5". He's sparring him too. Derek Kelly, who stepped in for Paul Hughes against JJ Wilson at PFL Belfast and unfortunately suffered a first round knockout there. But like, decent fighters. And then there's other guys, obviously. And I think every gym has this. Like, there's a 2-2 guy there. There's an 0-5 guy there. And everyone's like, well, how the fuck? What the fuck is going on?
We've come downhill since the mountain. Remember when he was sparring with the mountain?
Yeah. But I mean, I guess my question to you guys, there's also an amateur boxer, Craig Kavanagh. My question to you guys is, do you look into this that much, Chuck? Like, do you look at like who's a guy sparring and what does that mean? Does that have an impact? Because remember, GSP used to famously be like, oh, I'm not fighting anyone good. No one good is coming near me in the lead up to a fight.
Yeah. No, not really, but I think it's just the sign of our times now. I mean, in the day, you're right. Man, remember Ido Portal with his the pool? Yeah, all that stuff. Like, we seem to pay.
In the park. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. We were paying attention to all that stuff. I don't know if it's because McGregor has been away so long or if it's just the way it is now, but can you imagine really focusing too hard on anybody's who they're training with? I mean, we hear a lot about it. Maybe it's just because we've talked a lot more about that sort of thing over the years than we used to, but. Yeah, I don't read too much into it. I mean, you always feel like he had a pretty good micro sense and macro sense of what he was doing. So, like, in the training, I feel like he's going to bring in the guys he thinks he needs. You know what I mean? And I don't know if they're, like, because people don't know who these guys are, I don't really read too much into that. You know, I don't think that Connor knows what it means, you know? Like, he knows what he's getting to look at.
Well, then the thing is, too, like, I don't think it's worth spending too much time thinking about what is the professional record of the guy he's sparring. It's what is he getting out of sparring this particular person? Because when I worked on that story a few weeks ago ahead of the Gina Carano Ronda Rousey fight and trying to talk about how different the sport is and especially training is now than the sport that Gina Carano stepped away from in 2009, she kind of talked about it. And I talked to a lot of the fighters, especially some of them who were at Jackson's when she was there. And they were saying back then in those days, everybody was just sort of showing up to the gym and working with who was there. Nobody had the money to really set up a camp that was about them and about them preparing for their fight. It was all super camps, right? It was just like you got Jackson's Winklejohn in Albuquerque. You got America Top Team down in South Florida. You had AKA in the Bay Area. You know, you had the Miletich guys out in Iowa. And if you were training at one of those places, you'd tell them like, hey, I got a fight. I'm at this UFC event. Maybe I'm even the main event. It's on this date, fighting Rampage Jackson. And they'd be like, that's cool, man. Here's who's here today for sparring. That's who you go with. It's like, who's here around the weight that you were at? Who showed up for sparring today? And that might be dependent. Somebody's hurt. Somebody just fought. Somebody is drinking their woes away right now. And so they haven't been coming to practice. And that was just the reality of those days. And, you know, Brian Stan was the one who pointed out where he was like, you'd look around the gym and you'd be like, this guy's fighting Lyoto Machida in 2 weeks. Why the hell would he spar this guy whose style is nothing like a very specific style like Lyoto Machida's? It's not giving him any useful looks. All it is just timing and toughness, essentially, that you're working on at that point in sparring. And at this level, that's not good enough. You need to be working specifically on what you think you'll see on fight night. So who you bring in, it shouldn't be dependent on what is their own record in competition. It would be who can show you like the physical dimensions that you're going to see from Max Holloway and who can show you a style like what you're probably going to see from Max Holloway. Like if I was preparing for Max Holloway, I'd want a guy who is lanky, but who can throw a lot of punching volume, keep a high pressure, a high pace on you, and give you that sort of look so you can get used to dealing with it, like both physically and psychologically, what it's going to be like to be in the cage with a guy who's just kind of constantly coming at you, never trying to throw a big knockout shot, but always throwing something. Like, that's what you need to get ready for. And I wouldn't pay too much attention to, like, are those guys really good in their own career?
So check out my article, guys. It's up on Unground. I did want to get into, I don't know if you guys saw this, Michael Bisping had a new kind of thing with Paul Felder about Tom Aspinall. So we're just going to play this, and we have another video to follow. But here is what he has said in the last couple of days.
I've got to choose my words carefully here, but he just said he's still not clear to fight. But he's been very vague with the details.
Yeah.
Very vague with the details, you know. If I wasn't cleared, because he's got a YouTube channel, he posts content all the time. You talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, the procedures that he had, the operations, whatever they were. I had a surgery. It was a very, very serious surgery. It's called scleral buccal. Look it up online. It's gross what they do to the eyeball. I don't know what he had, but he hasn't talked about that. I had that surgery, recovered, came back, and had a fight in a shorter amount of time than what it's taken this whole eye poke saga. You know,
it stinks, Michael. It stinks.
I don't say it stinks. I mean, it's as a guy, I know Tom. We used to have a close relationship. We don't talk these days. He was a great guy. But I don't, just maybe. I don't know. You look between the lines. There's something fucking weird going on.
Right, I think maybe we should break this down a little bit here first. I mean, the thing that jumped out at me, I'm just being honest, Michael Bisping lost an eye. You know? Like,
you're saying maybe that's not who you want to listen to?
Maybe, like, maybe he shouldn't have rushed back that time, you know? Mm-hmm. And he's a tough bastard. He's a world champion. No denying that at all. But at the end of the day, you've lost sight in one eye. You know, you don't have sight in that eye. Like, that is that really the advice to be given to a guy who's suffered a traumatic injury to his eye?
Yeah, I mean, that is a little bit being like, listen, I drove without car insurance, got in an accident and a bankruptcy, but I was willing to do it, damn it. And you're just like, but should you have? Should you have done that? Because it doesn't seem like it went great. And you're right about that. The part that stood out to me, of course, was him saying, you know, we used to talk all the time. We don't talk anymore. Why do you suppose that might be? Like, you're not. This isn't exactly like, if I was Tom Aspinall, I wouldn't be sitting here being like, that's a good friend to me. He's out there kind of suggesting that I'm milking this, and I am the UFC heavyweight champion, and I'm just intentionally screwing with everybody, and my eyes are fine, and I just don't want to fight. Like, that, we wouldn't be friends after you said that about me on your show. So, like, I understand that. And it also just seems like Tom Aspinall at this point, it's been about 7 months, a little over 7 months since that fight happened. Now, one thing to point out, he got poked in both eyes.
Mm-hmm.
He was having problems with both eyes. Just because this surgery and recovery worked this way for you doesn't mean that it's going to work that exact way for everybody all the time. But to go from 7 months, and we don't necessarily, you know, we don't have a fight booked yet, but it's not inconceivable, depending on where his recovery is at, that he could be able to fight before the end of the year.
Yeah.
That would not be so out of historical precedent for the UFC heavyweight title. It gets defended about once a year, even in the best of times. So it's not like he's been out a crazy amount of time or anything, you know, like I think the stuff that's going on with Eddie Hearn speaking up for him a whole lot is maybe not doing him a ton of favors. It is inviting some speculation.
Yeah.
But to sit here and just be like, hey, it's worked this way for me, it ought to work that way for everybody all the time, why isn't he back? I'm going to subtly suggest that he's actually fine and he's just screwing with everybody. That is not a super cool move to do. And also reminds me, every once in a while we talk about, why don't the fighters collectivize somehow? Why don't they get a union? Why don't they get some collective bargaining? They're stronger together, and you see how they'll do each other.
Yeah.
And you kind of go, I mean, maybe that's why.
I mean, if he's going to have an ally in the game, it's got to be Michael Bisping, right? He's a fellow countryman, and he has an eye situation that he can talk to. And for it to hear him say that is very surprising. But would it be better received, I guess, if Bisping weren't an extension or an arm of the UFC at this point?
Right.
Because that's like, and same with Paul Felder. I mean, they're having a conversation, and I feel like part of what this is like, oh, come on, man. Like
two UFC right. employees talking to right. each other saying, why doesn't this guy hurry up and do what the UFC wants him to do?
Right. Yeah. Well,
here's the thing, lads.
That's a bad look to me.
It's a bit of a change of tune because we have a video here from Michael Bisping seeking out the situation when it happened. I believe we have it.
The one thing you can't do with an eye is rush back. That is the one big lesson that I learned because I did that. I rushed back too soon. I rushed back to sparring. I rushed back to competition, right? And I never saw that eye again. So Tom has got to take his time. And if he's having surgery, he's definitely going to be out for at least a few months.
Retrospect is not 2020 for that guy, man.
What? Is Michael Bisping aware of this Michael Bisping video? Somebody send it to him. Oh, I know he doesn't like me. He won't listen if I send it to him. Chuck, maybe you send it to him. We'll see if he can watch it and have a response to that one. Because what the hell, man?
That's the exact opposite of what he just said.
It's the exact opposite.
I'm glad you had him back to back. I mean,
yeah, like the most recent Michael Bisping and the other Michael Bisping is just like saying, don't listen to this advice from Michael Bisping. You know? I don't understand. It is weird, though. I think sometimes I've noticed this as a personality trait in a lot of fighters over the years that I've found fascinating. We saw it recently, right, with Aljamain Sterling, where he's still the only fighter to win a UFC title via DQ. And when he was suggesting that somebody else was playing up a foul in order to get a DQ win. I can't remember who it was he was talking about.
It was Aspinall. It was actually Aspinall, I think.
Was it? Was it actually Aspinall? Like,
he was against that. His like he was like fight on and all that kind of stuff when that happened.
And it's like, you can understand in your situation, like you're like, well, that was me. That one seems serious because I felt it. I was on the receiving end of it. I remember doing a story once about like injuries and does everybody fight hurt? Where do you know when, like, okay, this one I got to pull out of this fight? And I was talking to Matt Hughes, and he was saying about a time he had to convince Robbie Lawler, like when Matt Hughes was essentially Robbie Lawler's coach, and he had to convince him, bro, you have a torn bicep. You cannot fight. I know you have this fight booked. You don't want to pull out of it, but this is not an injury you just tough your way through. You need to pull out of this one and have surgery to repair that. And he had to talk Robbie into it. And I said, has that ever happened for you on the other side where like you've been hurt and somebody else has had to talk you into pulling out of a fight because you're too hurt? And he immediately back to back in these comments just said, no, I would never do that. I would never pull out of a fight. And I was like, but you just said, that sometimes you have to.
It's like
sometimes
Tito. It's just, Tito Ortiz.
And and you're just
contradicting
like,
himself.
There has to be that kind of mindset, I think, for some fighters where they have to be like, well, I am different. I am different than everybody else on the planet. And so it's like, this is one thing when it happens to you. It's a different thing when it happens to me, the protagonist. And I think that that's something that we're kind of seeing there from Michael Bisping, because he's just sort of being like, hey, just because you did it, just because it worked this way for you, which you also had previously said was a bad idea, doesn't mean that applies to absolutely everybody. I don't understand the people who don't just want to at least trust Tom when it comes to his own eyeballs. Like, don't you think Tom Aspinall wants to fight? That's how he gets paid, man. Yeah. He has the heavyweight title. This is the time. This is the time to go out there and get paid right now. Don't you think that if he could do that and if he saw an opportunity to go out there and get paid as the heavyweight champion, he would want to do that? What do you think? You think he just wants to sit home?
Yeah. And 7 months, you're right about that. Like, how long was John Jones holding the belt before he finally was like, okay, I'm retiring? How long was that?
Years.
Like, I mean, it's just... That's what I'm like, come on. This is a double standard, isn't it? I mean, you've got a guy who has a legit, and I mean, it's documented. It's not like it's not like he's just telling you stuff. He's documenting like what's happening. And yet we're having this discussion and people are like talking like that. I mean, it's absurd kind of, you know, it's like we've seen champions stay out a lot longer than this and they retain their belt and there's no problem. They're having an interim title fight, right? Like it's just, they're moving on. They're trying to still canalize right towards that. I'm like, I don't know why we need to be even kind of dissecting what Tom. There's been encouraging news right out of his camp, like he could maybe start at some point getting back into it. I feel like that's where the focus should be, not like tearing him down at this point.
Well, plus we all saw what happened to him. It's not like a training injury where we have to take your word for it.
True.
What happened. You know, we watched it. We watched Ciryl Gane just Three Stooges this man.
Yeah.
Bowling ball his eyes. Yep. And like we saw it. So it shouldn't be that hard for us to go like, yeah, you might need some time.
But it's also like he has made big improvements. He has been honest. Like, he is like, I'm able to do this now. I wasn't previously able to do that. I'm trying to get to this point. Like, he is updating us a lot, actually, about how this is going. You know, like, I don't see that logic. He is telling us, like, when I was with them the day he had got that surgery, I left thinking, I don't know if this guy's ever going to fight again. And nobody around him knew. Not one person was willing to say, this is a piece of piss. He's going to get straight back on. And that's changed. If you listen to what he's saying now, he's like, I'm going to get back. Like, this has improved so much. This has started to work. This has started to work. I should be clear for contact in a few weeks. All these kind of things. Like, that is updating people. That is telling people we are progressing towards fighting again. Yeah. Now, we did mention that maybe this Eddie Hearn stuff might not be serving him too well. Here's the latest from Eddie today at the Katie Taylor press conference.
They haven't invited him to the White House. He's supposed to be fighting the winner.
Really interesting what's happening in the UFC right now.
You've got to be careful. I'm not going to let Tom Aspin fight for the kind of money that's in his contract to be involved in a fight against Pereira or Gane for literally 1/50th of the revenue of that show.
Yeah.
Fuck that. I won't let him do it. And he's not going to... You know, it's time that those UFC fighters stop being mugs and started to understand that these people are taking advantage of them. They deserve better.
Are you saying Tom's going to retire if they come back and say
I'm saying that my advice to Tom Aspen, don't you dare take that fight for the money that's in your contract. You are one of the biggest stars in UFC. Everybody will be sick to their stomach about the money that Tom Aspen was supposed to get for that kind of fight. Mate, you don't need that. You nearly lost your eyesight. You want to go back and fight for virtually nothing. It's outrageous. And I will not. I'll do everything I can to not allow it.
Shout out to Donna Corby there, who's been on a bit of a generational run here. He was putting it to Dana White there a couple of weeks ago, and now Eddie Hearn giving him the big chat. Fellow Dublin 15 man, we know we love Donna around here. But yeah, you know, Chuck, we're kind of talking about this stuff not really serving Tom all that well. How do you think Dana and the lads are going to feel about that?
I don't think they're going to respond to that well. I'm just making a prediction here. I don't see them.
I don't think they'll be like, Eddie makes some good points, honestly. Let's update Tom's contract.
You know what I'm doing? The number series, right? That is 150th. Boss, we got to fix this.
Yeah. We forgot to carry the one on this contract. I mean, let's get over there.
Oh, man. That's not. I mean, now the drama surrounding like that whole Aspinall Hearn White thing is just, it's its own entertainment. I mean, I feel like it's going to become like something completely crazier than we're even seeing now as we go on here. Especially after like after they get this interim thing, we finally get to that point. Oh my God, it's gonna get crazy.
But if I'm Tom, I do not want to be just a pawn for these guys to argue over and to use against each other. Like, this is your career, man. This is your life. You. I mean, I don't know what he feels like his relationship with Eddie Hearn is. If how much of this is like Eddie Hearn is giving you the sincere advice because he cares about you and cares about your career.
That's a good point.
Because it does seem like the advice dovetails a lot with here's what Eddie Hearn would say in order to continue his war with Dana White. And the point he's making where he's like, when are these fighters going to realize that the UFC is taking advantage of you? You're getting so little of the revenue from this event. Like, those are all valid points. But it's also sort of like, practically, what are you going to do about it is the question.
He's in a contract, yes.
Yeah, if you're saying, I would tell him absolutely not, don't take this fight for this money, and do what instead? Because that's what the part, you need to have a plan for that. And it's not saying that there couldn't possibly be any plan. You could say like, hey, instead, go get your boxer's license, tell them I'm a boxer, see if they want to challenge you and get into a thing there saying that... can they stop you legally from going and fighting in a different combat sport? Like, maybe you could try something. Like, that's what Conor McGregor did when, you know, they didn't want to let him box Floyd Mayweather. He went and got a boxer's license, and then they kind of said, all right, let's talk about it. And so it's not like there are zero options, but you need to have a plan. It can't just be like, don't accept this money. Okay, well, then do what instead? Because that's where I would start to worry if I'm Tom Aspinall, because you're just like, the time is ticking. For you, I mean, at heavyweight, you got a little more time, but you need to cash in on this big moment now, and it's not going to last forever.
Yeah, I wonder what like Tom's reaction is to this. Like, you know, he's just going about his day or whatever. Someone pings him on an L link. He's like, oh,
Not again.
Gotta get a few phone calls about this, you know?
Okay, what do you make, though, of the they didn't invite him to the White House event?
I think that's bullshit. Like, I think that is just in terms of, like, for, like, you know, we're the Foy fans. As you said at the start, you know, we like to see a certain bit of, you know, we want Tom Aspinall sitting cage side when the two dudes
who
are
stakes.
Fighting.
The thing like right he's like, him. Yeah.
Like, how do you not invite him?
I don't know.
He is the one fighter you'd say he should probably be there. I know Rick was talking about this on Boys in the Back yesterday, but I completely agree with him. Like, if anyone has a real function on the roster who isn't fighting, it's fucking him. It is. He is the number one guy you want there. Like, what the fuck is that about? I think that's crazy.
See, that's what I wonder when I heard Sean Strickland talking about, like, I've been banned from the UFC White House event. And I was like, have you, though, or did you just not get invited?
Yeah, right.
Because there's a difference. And, like, you could make the argument there where you're like, yeah, why should Sean Strickland be at the White House event? Like, neither of the title fights have any sort of relevance for him. It's not like he absolutely needs to be hovering over these procedures for any reason. I could see the UFC being like, Sean Strickland, bit of a loose cannon in some ways. Don't necessarily want to vouch for this guy and be like, hey, we brought this guy to the party. He might do anything.
Yeah.
He might just like eat the scenery here. So I can understand why the UFC would just like leave him at home for this. And there's a difference between them being like, we don't see a need for you to be at this highly secure event, which space is limited and we only get a certain amount of tickets. You can stay home, and him being like, I've been banned for my views on Israel. And it's like, I mean, maybe that didn't help, but I don't necessarily know that you were going to be there otherwise. Yeah. Tom Aspinall, though, it does make sense at least for them to reach out and be like, hey, are you available? Could you make the trip? Do you want to make the trip? Like, it does seem like it would at least be worth having an invite there, unless the UFC is thinking like, you know what? We might be headed toward a future where you just take the belt off Tom and say Alex Pereira or Ciryl Gane, the winner there, is your new champion. Or B, man, this one ain't about the fighters at all. Stay home. This is about the UFC and Trump.
That's crazy. That's
I did hear that there are 5,000 total seats available or whatever they're going to do. And he was 5,001 from what I understand.
he just missed it.
Yeah.
He missed out on dimensions. His waist is too big, apparently.
We've got to have the Treasury Secretary's wife or something there. Can't do it, Tom.
One last news item before we hit the much revered ad hoc section. PFL, they seem to have a good fight in their hands. No. Johnny Eblen, Costello Van Steenis, they went on Ariel's show and they fucking sold. But man, I was ready for that rematch. I was like, you know what? Eblen is being an awful bollocks here, and Costello Van Steenis does not know how to deal with him. Press release today. The Professional Fighters League today announced that former Bellator middleweight champion Johnny Pressure Eblen and 2023 PFL light heavyweight tournament champion Impa Kasanganoi will compete for the interim PFL middleweight world championship at PFL Austin on Saturday, July 18th at Moody Center in Austin, Texas. The bout marks the first interim world title in PFL history after an injury-forced reigning PFL middleweight world champion Costello Van Steenis to withdraw from his title defense against Eblen. Well, fuck me.
Man.
That is some bad luck for PFL right there. Not a bad fight. I like
that. That is a bummer. But I mean, we're talking about interim. Van Steenis just fought when? He was just in Madrid, like, what, it's like 2 months ago, like six weeks ago? Yeah. And they're already doing an interim. I get why they're doing that, but it's probably more about Eblen. Like, you know, he was going to have a title shot. Like, let's keep a title in play for this thing. But that does suck, because I feel like the Van Steenis thing has been built to kind of like, even though Austin is arbitrary place, but it was kind of his whole kind of cinematic take of the belt and all that stuff was kind of leading to that. And I was actually very interested to see how that would play out.
The craziest part to me is learning that this is the first interim title PFL has ever had to do.
Is that right? I was wondering that,
actually. That's what they said in that press release. Okay.
Don't quote me on that. Not my words. There's...
I would assume that they had looked into it. I certainly haven't. I haven't looked into see... But if you made it this far as a promoter and never had to do an interim title before, that's pretty good.
That is true.
Well, I guess so much of it was tournament, right?
Yeah.
It was just tournaments for so long. Interesting note, Sergio Pettis takes on Lewis McGrillan, another Manchester guy. I've told you guys about McGrillan before. An aggressive redhead from Manchester who is terrifying. That is a huge fight for him. He's out of Manchester top team. Carl Prince over there as well. Of course, Lerone Murphy, Dakota Dicheva started there as well. Yeah, a huge talent, and that is a massive opportunity for him. I'm going to be looking forward to
Is he on that same card?
Yeah, grilling Sergio Pettis, yeah.
So weird to like have this thing in Austin, Texas. Just like you were mentioning Dakota, or we were talking, I guess it was actually not you, but I was talking about Dicheva ended up in Long Island.
Yeah.
You know, like what a bizarre thing. Like it seems like you'd want these guys to be in their home market there.
I'm with Ariel in that these PFL events seem so much bigger when they do them outside the US.
Yeah.
They just seem, even the Madrid one I thought was really good to be
honest. Big time.
Just from a production wise, and they had them vignettes of interviewing guys around the gyms and all that stuff. Like it felt really fucking cool. People were really up for it. I just feel like, right, Austin, Texas, obviously, like there could be a good audience there. And did you say Long Beach or Long Island?
Long Island, I think, is where, Dakota's going to be.
Yeah, I hope it goes well for them, but really, I just think they all pale in comparison to the ones they do overseas.
Especially Dakota. So, she should be, that'd be a huge homecoming, wouldn't it?
Well, you could do McGrillin and Dakota in Manchester, you feel?
Yeah.
That would be fucking crazy, but. Yeah. However, into the ad hoc section, boys.
Listen,
did I miss something, Ben? Did you become an ice hockey champion and just not bring it up on the fucking show? Because someone saw a tweet from you last week and it said hockey champion. And Jordan actually got on to me post-show and said, why didn't we bring this up? And I said, well, Jordan, that's your fault. Andy would never do this. Andy is producing the show today, not Jordan. She would never do anything like that. Please tell me, did this happen?
Listen, I don't like to make this show all about me and my many athletic accomplishments. That's not what we're here to do. I mean,
but please, I'm begging you.
Did I captain a team to the Spring League Championship? Yeah. I mean, yeah.
That's one does.
Factually, that is true. Did I have 2 goals and 1 assist in that game, being in on 3 of the 4 goals that we scored to win 4-3 in a dramatic victory? Technically, yeah. Sure. I did do that. Did we get to receive the much sought after Spring League trophy, which is a 24-pack of PBR?
Best kind of.
Absolutely. Is it the sweetest beer you'll ever drink? 100%. 100% it is. But I don't like to talk about it. It's not something I like to dwell on.
Congratulations.
Thanks. The important thing now is that the hockey gear has been disinfected, cleaned, dried out, and put away for the summer.
I never even saw your playoff beard or anything. Like it's.
Well, in the Spring League, the playoffs are, shall we say, brief but furious.
Okay. All right.
But what we had to do in order to win the finals was to beat a team that went 2-0 against us during the regular season. Ooh. And so
even sweeter.
We had to believe. We had to believe that, you know, it was a real miracle on ice moment where, hey, they might beat us 9 times out of 10, but not that night. Not when it mattered.
And any scraps? Love it.
Any what?
Any fights?
Man, look, nobody in this league is great enough on ice skates to be trying to do another thing on ice, like to be fighting on ice. No, that's no. It would be a sad, sad affair. Like even the pro hockey players don't always make it look great when they're fighting.
It's not
always
nice to be sad though.
The most technical fighting you've ever seen. I've seen one time in a game in that league where fists were actually flying after one of the whistle. And to her credit, the referee in that game, because it was already, we were ahead like 7-2, and that contributed, and we were still
another putting
humble on
brag here, huh? Another fucking humble brag.
We were still putting it on him, which is maybe why the fist
and you pulled your
fly
goalie to try to get that 8th goal
in the first place. But it was like 5 minutes left in the third period. These guys are getting frustrated. Some fists started to fly, and the referee just said, "All right, that's it. This one's over." And just moved the goals and signaled for the Zamboni. And I was like, man, she really pulled a power move on us. And this took the wind out of everybody's sails. And we're like, all right.
That's hilarious for like an adult league. You could see that happening in like a, you know, fifth graders or something. But that's crazy.
She was just like, not putting up with this bullshit tonight. Everybody hit the showers.
What way would you approach it if someone started throwing hands at you?
You know what? In that specific game, I do remember earlier where you could tell they were starting to get chippy. They were starting to get mad. And at one point, like, you know, after a whistle, one of the dudes kind of slashed at my shin, which is protected by a shin guard. So it's not like it hurt or anything, but he was doing it out of frustration. I was like trying to get a reaction. And I looked at him and said, really? Because it's also weird to go to hockey from my main recreational pursuit since the time I was like 20 was jujitsu. Jujitsu and a little bit of boxing and stuff. And I still go to like a boxing gym for like the workout and hit the pads. But these days I don't need to be getting hit in the head anymore. And so you come from like jujitsu gyms as your main athletic outlet. And people in jujitsu gyms are not talking shit to each other in an unfriendly way. They're not being tough guys because you know eventually you'll get mopped up, man. Like there's every gym someone's got an enforcer. Every gym has somebody to enforce a sense of etiquette. And like eventually you will realize it's a bad idea to be that kind of an asshole. And then you go into a rec hockey league. And I would see, especially my first couple seasons, I would see guys where they're out there talking all kinds of shit and trying to start to shoving people after the whistle. And I'm like, bro, you are a 50-year-old lawyer. I don't think this is a good idea for you. But they feel very comfortable doing it because they know it never comes to that in these leagues. It's all just talk. It's all just a bunch of like little dogs yapping at each other. And I was just like, they don't do this in jujitsu, man. And there's a reason.
It is. It's very true. Chuck, I know that it's not the Nuggets year, but it's your friend Ari Lawani's New York Knicks against Wemby in the finals. Do you think they're going to do it? Like, we should have a good idea by the next time we convene on this here crack.
I was pretending as if I froze, but...
Wow, that was a really good one. That was incredible.
Oh, my God. No, I'm rooting for him, you know?
Our producers a heart attack, man.
I was about to text on.
That was an Eddie Hearn thing. He did that once. I saw him do that. I'm rooting for him. That's cool. Aren't you? Look at you.
Look at me. Like, look at you. Knicks fan. I think it'll mean more to me than it will mean to Ariel. Like, I've had this hat for 2 years now. You know what I mean? It's huge.
Yeah. He's going about it the right way. Like, usually he's kind of like bragging, like Ariel's on there and he's pre-bragging, and I'm like, just wait until you get it and then do if you want to do that, you know. But I feel like he's kind of going about it the right way psychologically here, so I'm hoping it pans out.
He's managing himself a lot better this time around, I must say.
I'm going to send you have fun. That's what I'll say.
you ain't going to watch if it goes to a game 7, will you watch it?
This is on you, PC. If it goes to a game 7, text me when we get into the final 2 minutes. I'll turn it off.
He's some kind of piss. I'm gonna send you that picture of the guy who got to get his dick chopped off.
This is what I think these episodes of The Crack need to start with, like, so you can hear the kind of conversations.
It's always like 1 minute before
with us. Yeah, and if we just like lead into it, you know, you hear the music and everything, and all you hear is Pete C telling the end of a story. He's like, yeah, so the guy had to have his dick cut off.
Hey guys, everybody, welcome to The Crack.
Who don't know, there's a WhatsApp message going around guy on a fucking stag party, right? He goes home, he gets drunk, he falls asleep. The best man decides a funny prank would be to put a signet ring around his flute. This guy gets excited in the morning. He's asleep. He's been drinking. A lot of blood rushes up. His dick goes fucking, it swells up and it goes purple. And then they're going to have to cut his dick off and he has to cancel his wedding. What?
Oh,
you don't want to see. There's a voice message and everything. It's crazy.
I didn't need to hear this twice. You know, I really didn't.
The book. Oh, there's a UFC this weekend. Who's excited for Bilal Muhammad v. Gabriel Bonfi?
At the Apex, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Man, I tell you what. If I'm Bilal Muhammad, there's got to be a moment where you going, I was a champion not so long ago. I was carried in the arms of cheerleaders, and now I was parading through the streets in England as the new UFC champion, it was like a blink of an eye, and they're going, how would you like to main event a UFC fight night at the Apex where we're matching you up against a hungry young up-and-comer who we want to see if he's got the goods and if you have fallen all the way off? And also, it is the weekend before the White House event, barely even notice.
I know. That's the part the slap in the face. Is like,
the UFC
it's completely
executives
overshadowed.
Yeah. Might not even watch this one. They got other stuff to do. Like, there's got to be a moment where you're just like, ain't it some shit how quickly fortunes can turn in this sport?
Yo, I will say, it's pretty much evens. Bilal Muhammad v. Gabriel Bonfi.
Yeah.
I think that's fucking crazy. How are you going to do Bilal like that?
This guy's fought. Because he's a gentleman of a certain age at this point.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Bonfim's been rolling.
Yeah. I don't know. I want to slam that Bilal line if I was a gambling sort.
Of course
I'm not. Yeah, interesting. I'll be up watching it because I'm a sick fuck and I really don't know what's wrong with me.
Got Bryce Mitchell on the card, right? That should be good.
Oh, do you know what I like? The old smile killer, Faraz Zayam of France. Very good, underrated talent. He's going to smoke Tom Nolan as far as I'm concerned. Sorry, Tom, if I'm wrong. I'll take it back.
Tom Nolan's a young dude still. What is he, like 20?
He is, yeah. He's very
two
young.
Or three or something. It's good. That's a good fight. That's actually a pretty good fight.
When I was on with Luke Thomas, he played the clip of Bryce Mitchell at the media day, and he was like, So I don't know if you guys know this. When I'm in Vegas before these fights, I like to go out and explore ghost towns, essentially, like old abandoned mining towns. And look what I brought back. And he held up like three rusty nails, and he was like, I got these nails. And it was just like, fuck. All right, man. Like, what do you... I don't know what you wanted people to say to that.
What was he hoping for?
Especially because it's like, imagine you bring those home with you. You got them, you know, they're sitting on the mantelpiece or something, and you're just like, people are coming over, and you're just like, hey, look, did you see the nails? And they're just like, the rusty nails? Yeah, okay. And you're like, that was from like a ghost town. And they're like, oh, okay, I guess that does make them slightly cooler than if you just took rusty nails out of your back deck or something. But also, I don't know what else to say to that, Bryce, other than, huh, okay. All right.
Do you think...
Also, though, shouldn't be taking stuff away from one of those, you know, what we say here. You know, what if everybody did it, Bryce?
That's right.
Do you think the dude who had his dick cut off is going to keep the dick there and just show it to people when they come into his house being like, you never guess what happened there?
This is a real personality test, is because there's a certain kind of person. I say this as one of my friends here in town. She just this week had her fallopian tubes removed. Okay. And her big question every time she met with the surgeons and the big, I've heard about it several times, is will they let her take the tubes home?
We got to end the show.
Yes.
We got to end the show. This is
fair play.
You guys,
they said yes.
Took them home. They said yes.
Come on.
She took them home and is now planning to put them in some sort of resin cast thing so that she can display it. So there's a certain kind of person who loves it.
Do you think they look like fully grown sea monkeys?
I bet I'm going to find out the next time I go over to her house, Chuck. I bet I'm going to find out.
Well, you know, it's been a great old episode today. I mean,
yes.
We've hit a lot of topics. Do we have any super chats, Andy? Come on. See what we got. The confrontationalist.
Okay.
How could a defense of Nicolas Cage as a generational actor omit the stream of his achievement in Ghost Rider, and how?
Okay.
This sounds like a Ben question.
Is that for you, Ben?
This is
directed at me.
Yeah.
Okay, because ahead. I did write on my Substack.
You did.
Fightinglife.substack.com. I did write about how I
he
feel
is the
that
confrontationalist. He is that, the confrontationalist.
That Nick Cage is one of the most fearless acting talents of our time, most willing to take big risks. The Ghost Rider, not a good film. I did not enjoy it. Nick Cage he does as much as you can do with that role. The thing I appreciate the most is I saw some video once, and I think it was from Ghost Rider, where they show a shot of him with his shirt off, you know, because he's in a superhero movie, so he had to get like jacked for the role. And people were asking, are those your actual abs? He had like a six pack. And he was like, yeah, no, those are my real abs. And everybody thought it was CGI. And I worked really hard to get those abs, and I'm never doing it again. Because if everybody thinks it's CGI, it's not worth it. And so it was a lot of work to do it. And for what? Just for people to believe it was all just like computer tricks? No, I'm never doing it again. And I was like, respect. Respect.
Wow,
like,
dude.
Yeah.
Fair play.
It's good note against Ghost Rider. Have not seen it. Will not see it.
Don't
anything
see it.
Else?
Don't see that
anything
one.
Anything else,
Andy? What's this?
It's happening. Tickets at 34 per person. Fam 125 package. Ringside a grand. If I don't get a ticket, by Jesus, Ben, Chuck, see you in Dublin. Sorry, that was, if I don't get a ticket, by Jesus, and then on to
got it.
See you in Dubai. Are we all coming? Everyone's coming, right?
What's the date on that again?
It's September 5th.
He's got an opera.
Might have a thing. Might have a thing on September 5th.
Chuck, you're coming though. Chuck, you'll be there.
I would love to be there.
We can watch Ghost Rider.
Yeah.
That'd be fun. Yeah. Actually, you know what? Screw it. I'm going. September 5th. Woo! Let's go.
September 5th. Okay.
We're all here.
Dublin.
I'm bringing people on a tour of Blanche because GC really wants to see it. But I'm going to do it like, do you remember when Voice went to North Korea and they just brought them like to certain places and they have people smiling being like, this is great.
We love it here. Life is good here.
It's only going to be a quick 5-minute in and out, but you know, you'll get a great sense of the place.
Okay.
You'll get a great sense of the place. Anything else? The Geordie Nation love Katie and Petesy Carroll. Well, the Geordie Nation, I love yous. I did say you didn't have a coastline last week. I apologize about that. I now am aware that the Geordie Nation, Newcastle, has in fact a coastline.
Pop. Me and Chuck sitting right here.
I mean, have you read the comments? Incidental. They don't care that I'm here. It's just Ben and Chuck all the time. It's like fucking Petesy, where the fuck are you here most of the time? So I'm going to take
it. This conversation about Newcastle. I was the one who brought up the 1971 Michael Caine film Get Carter and said that it made me want to visit Newcastle, even though the film goes to great lengths to portray Newcastle as a shithole and I still want to go. What up, Geordie Nation?
You've done it again. You just said it. You said shithole again. There was no need for that.
I said Get Carter said it was a shithole. I want to go even if it is a shithole. I want to go check it out.
A beautiful island just off of Newcastle, I believe. I believe I'm correct.
Hey, will you take me to Donnybrook?
I'll take you wherever you want to
go. I'm going.
Wherever you want
to
go.
I'm going to swing by Newcastle on my way to Dublin.
You could do that. Yeah. Probably a 40-minute flight, Ben. Easy peasy.
I'm doing it.
If the bugs were biting, this is a super chat we just got. I believe this is what Andy just told me. The chat says, if the bugs were biting, would you walk out of UFC White House, Joe?
Would they let you? Security for this event, I don't know if you're going to be able to just be like, you know what? I've seen it. I was really just here to see Kyle Daukaus. And I've seen it. The bugs are kind of bad. I'm going to head down to the pub. Will they let you go? They might not let you.
That is a great question, but I don't want to be sitting there if there's a bunch of bugs. I'm going to say that right now, man. I will not tolerate that. I will get up, even if I have to get arrested.
Well, Chuck, I can tell you the fact that you're going has made me so much more excited about this. I'm not even bullshitting you. No pressure, but fuck me. I know you are going to deliver absolute gold for us next week on uncrowned.com.
Don't set that bar too high.
No, you fucking will. It's me. I'm buzzing for it.
Yes, you will. I can't wait.
And hopefully you'll be able to join us. There'll be no restrictions.
Hopefully, yeah.
That'll be fantastic.
I'll just be in a hotel room if that's okay.
No, I need you.
Or on the lawn. We could do it from the lawn. Yeah, whatever you guys want.
That'd be great. But Andy said the lawn. Yeah, she needs it on the lawn. Thank you all so much for joining us on The Crack. Jeez, we went a bit late there. Sorry, boys. If you had plans that I ruined, I can only apologize. But we love you so much. We'll see you next week. 2 days away from the infamous and well, I mean, the White House event. I don't know what I'm saying anymore. I love you.